Hi, this is Lou Rockwell, and how great to have as our guest this morning, Mr. Roger Stone. Roger is legendary in a number of ways. He's legendary, I would say, as the best-dressed man in America. He compiles a wonderful column every year on the other 10 best-dressed and the 10 worst-dressed men in America. He's legendary as a political consultant, of course, a man who helped elect Republican presidents from Richard Nixon to Ronald Reagan to George H.W. Bush to George W. Bush. We forgive him for that, by the way.
I'm still trying to atone.
Now he's legendary in a third way. He's writing bestsellers. So his first one that he was kind enough to come on and talk to us before was on the psychopath LBJ as the murderer of JFK. And now there's this fantastic new book, Nixon's Secrets, The Rise, Fall, and Untold Truth About the President, Watergate, and the Pardon. So Roger, you've been famous for what you've known. You've been famous for what you've been involved in all these years. Why are you now, and thank goodness you are, by the way, starting to tell us about the things that have been only shared with intimates over the years?
I figured that in this 40th anniversary of Nixon resignation, that the left-leaning mainstream media would go all out to bury any possible positive accomplishment by Richard Nixon. I've always felt that Nixon was singled out in a way that, say, Kennedy and Johnson were not, specifically being criticized for things in the 50s and 60s that, as you know, were actually very commonplace. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I seek to put Nixon in context. Now, my book is not a love letter to Nixon, nor is it an excoriation. I think it's pretty balanced. You take the good with the bad. I think at this anniversary date, there's a need for some balance. I myself have been on a political odyssey. I started out as a Goldwater Republican. I left the Republican Party in disgust and went libertarian in 2012 because the Republican Party has morphed into the same party as the Democratic Party. Big government, big debt, big spending, terrible monetary policies. The parties have become the same. So I've become cynical in my old age, I guess. But I guess overall, it's an attempt to put politics into some perspective and to put Nixon, the most durable political figure who really was a contender for 40 years, who had an extraordinary run, in some perspective.
Well, it's true. In fact, I've always had sort of a soft spot for Nixon, not only because I raised money as a kid for his 1960 campaign, which wasn't difficult in Massachusetts among the Republicans, because of course everybody hated JFK. He was smart and he was interesting. I thought his foreign policy in terms of Russia and China were terrific. But he's just a very interesting figure. But I've also thought his downfall was a coup. I mean, this didn't just happen by accident. Who ran the coup against Nixon, or do you agree that there was a coup?
There was very definitely a coup, and I think the coup is run essentially by the military-industrial complex, by the CIA and the Pentagon. First of all, they don't want to withdraw American troops from Vietnam. They actually think, even though Johnson has greatly escalated the Vietnam War, now we have Nixon in there, he's really going to take the handcuffs off. Well, that turns out to be wrong. They hate the idea of the SALT agreement with the Soviets. They want to keep the arms buildup going. Mm-hmm. Of course, the defense contractors, they agree with that. And lastly, they really despise the outreach to China. So we know for an absolute fact that the Pentagon is running a spy ring starting in 1969. They're stealing documents. They're rifling through desks. They're actually going through Kissinger's briefcase. They are stealing and sending, you know, internal foreign policy and defense documents to the Pentagon so that the Pentagon is one step ahead of what Nixon is doing. I outline in my book what I think were two attempts to actually assassinate Nixon as they assassinated JFK. Edwin Kaiser, who was a contract CIA killer, was recruited for the mission by Frank Sturgis, later, ironically, one of the Watergate burglars, also on the ground in Dealey Plaza in 1963 when Kennedy is killed. And Kaiser backs out only when he learns the target is the President of the United States. I have Kaiser's letters, which were supplied to me by his son, who has his own book coming out shortly, which should be a real humdinger. But I believe they tried twice to take Nixon out. And when they fail, they take him out in a coup d'etat. Senator Howard Baker finds the CIA all over Watergate. But because on the Senate Watergate Committee, Republican Lowell Leiker votes with the Democrats on every procedural issue, he can't get a majority vote to pursue the CIA angle. He ends up adding it to the final report, and if you dig, you can find it. Why would the CIA send somebody to Jim McCord's house the day after the break-in to burn all of his files, for example? Why was Eugenio Martinez, who's 92 years old and who I interviewed for the book, he's still on the payroll of the CIA. He is reporting to his handlers about the Watergate break-in. So I believe the CIA ultimately learns of the Watergate break-in plan, which is an amateurish plan that is pushed forward by Dean and Magruder and Liddy. They infiltrate it, and then they sabotage it. So, yes, I believe that just as the murder of John Kennedy was a coup d'etat, the taking down of Nixon is a coup d'etat. And the key figure in the coup is General Alexander Haig. Haig's loyalty is not to Nixon. Haig's loyalty is the Pentagon. Haig's loyalty is to the Joint Chiefs and Nixon's pro-peace policies, foreign and defense policies, are anathema to the hardliners.
And of course, Nixon was aware of all this. What did he try to do to try to stop it?
Well, he finds out they're spying on him. He's initially furious, but John Mitchell, his attorney general, talks him out of doing anything again. Nixon always avoided confrontation. He actually hated confrontation. For a guy who had a reputation as a tough guy, he would go to any length to avoid personal confrontation. It's one of the reasons why he isolates himself and he is working through others. Nixon doesn't fire you. He sends somebody to fire you. Nixon doesn't even tell Agnew he's done. He sends Al Haig to tell Agnew he's done, actually to threaten Agnew. I make the case in my book that Agnew is set up. Agnew isn't guilty of anything. He finally only cops to a minor tax problem, but they move him out of the line of succession because they've got no strings on Agnew. Agnew's railroaded, and he knows it. He writes it in his own book. He also told me directly over lunch before his death that he felt the CIA moved him out of, and the Justice Department, the government mechanism, moved him out of the line of succession so that they could insert Jerry Ford, a man that Nixon had the goods on. The pardon, in my opinion, comes about because Nixon is well aware that Gerald Ford, as a congressman, as a member of the Warren Commission, has personally changed the autopsy records to move the description of the wound in Kennedy's upper back to his lower neck in order to accommodate the government's cockamamie single bullet theory. William Sullivan, the number three man at the FBI, and Deke DeLoach, then the number two man at the FBI, both say this in their own memoirs. It was an order from Hoover. Hoover convinced Ford to do his dirty work. Nixon is fully aware of that. So while facing the abyss, Nixon essentially tells Al Haig to go to Jerry Ford, and you tell Jerry that if Nixon's going down, he's taking everybody with him. He's going to tell them about Dallas. He's going to tell them about the autopsy. He's going to tell them about the CIA. So it's very clear from August 1st, 1974, when Haig finally gets a chance to meet with Ford privately. Interestingly, that same day, Haig goes over to meet Ford, but when he gets to the White House, he finds that Robert Hartman, a Ford aide, is in the meeting, so he doesn't want to talk in front of Hartman. He leaves. He comes back 4 hours later, secures a private meeting with Ford, and from that point on, it's very clear Ford is going to pardon Nixon, which costs Ford his reelection. That's how devastating I think that confrontation is. My sources on this are two. Nick Rui, who was Nixon's traveling aide for 40 years, says to me directly that, you know, Nixon knew the Dallas setup. And then secondarily, in his elderly years, Al Haig brags about it in a Palm Beach country club. And I have a letter from someone who was present when Haig was telling the story in his cups, I might add. So, yes, I agree with the coup d'etat theory, and I also put forward that assertion about the pardon.
Was Nixon concerned when he was making this promise, which I would have loved to have, of course, heard him and written and read what he would write about all of this, but thank goodness we have you telling us the true story. But was he concerned about an assassination attempt at that point?
I think Agnew certainly was. Interestingly enough, when Haig goes to him and says, look, you need to resign or else. We can play this nice or we can play this dirty. And it's interesting because this happens contemporaneously with the Church Committee in the U.S. Senate first laying on the public the revelations about the CIA's involvement in various assassinations. So Agnew thinks that he won't resign. He says in his book, will it be a car accident? Will it be a faked heart attack? How would they try to kill me? So Agnew clearly feels threatened. Mm-hmm. I think Nixon believes that he has too many secrets. I'm not sure he's ever aware of the fact that, as confirmed by Jerry Hemmings of the CIA, that the agency is considered trying to take him out, kill him in Miami on two occasions. But I think that he knows once he's resigned, the only piece of leverage he's got left is his knowledge of what happened in Dallas. And it's the biggest piece of his knowledge. It's why in the White House tapes, you can hear him say, the Warren Commission is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated.
Wow. I just can't tell you, Roger, how great it is to get real history from you as versus the lies of the media or the lies, for that matter, of the official historians. By the way, your books are so well written, so interesting, so comprehensive, so compelling. Once you start reading it, folks, you won't put it down. I mean, that I know that's a cliche, but it's actually true of these Roger Stone books. So I can't recommend them highly enough, Roger, especially this new one, Nixon's Secrets, The Rise, Fall, and Untold Truth About the President, Watergate, and the Pardon, and also the previous book about the man who killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. So, Roger, keep doing what you're doing. It's wonderful to welcome you as a libertarian. I was an old Goldwater supporter in those days myself. It's wonderful the way your career has developed. It's a public service as well as so interesting, so fascinating. So thanks for all you do, and thanks for coming on the show today. And I'm looking forward to the next book.
Well, thanks for having me. I think the next book is going to be about the Bush crime family.
Oh, that's a big book.
It's a lot of work, but it's interesting. You probably saw that George W. Bush is now writing a biography of George H.W. Bush. I would like to come out contemporaneous with that. I'm not sure I can make it. There's a lot of ground to cover, but the truth about George H.W. Bush needs to be told. I believe that there were at least two attempts to take Reagan out in the coup d'etat. First, the assassination by Hinckley, who's clearly tied to the Bush family. And then I think Bush sets Reagan up in Iran-Contra. That's a setup. Bush isn't out of blue. He's running the show. So that's next.
Well, wonderful, because, of course, Bush, I've always thought that George H.W. Bush was involved in the Kennedy assassination, too. And, of course, a longtime CIA agent. He didn't just become involved with the CIA when he became director. He'd had a long career in it. And so the Bush crime family goes back before H.W. Bush, right? Goes back to his father, the senator, and a huge amount of criminality and death and destruction as a result of the Bush family, not only to America, but the whole world. So that will be another great Roger Stone book. Thank you, Roger.
There's next on the hit parade. Thanks for having me.
Terrific. Bye-bye. Well, thanks so much for listening to the Lou Rockwell Show today. Take a look at all the podcasts. There have been hundreds of them. There's a link on the LRC front page. Thank you.